This weekend, Cherie Foytlin, the wife of an offshore oil worker, plans to leave Louisiana for a 1,200-mile walk to the White House. She expects to arrive next month, just before the one-year anniversary of the BP oil spill. The message Foytlin hopes to bring President Obama is about the environment, but it's also about jobs. Like many Louisianans, she supports offshore drilling and stricter environmental regulation. To her, the two are not mutually exclusive. She's hardly alone. The state that has seen its marshes blackened with oil is also the state that is most eager for oil field jobs to return. Looking from the outside, this might seem like a paradox. Here in Louisiana, it's not. To understand why, it's useful to visit Cherie and Forrest Foytlin in Rain, Louisiana, where they have lived with their six children since 2005.
I had came back to Louisiana to help bury my father, and that's whenever I was speaking to an older brother of mine who worked offshore and has for almost 30 years. Anyway, he had told me about the job opportunities we had here offshore, so that's what I did. I basically came back to go to work offshore.
The move represented a new start. In Oklahoma, Cherie had lost her job, and Forrest's paycheck from driving a street sweeper wasn't enough to keep their house out of foreclosure. In Louisiana, Forrest put pipe together on a deepwater drilling rig. He earned $1,500 a week, about four times his previous salary.
Every morning when I wake up, I could go outside and see all these people working and bringing fuel to our nation, and I just love it. I was a very important person on that rig because it's kind of hard to see how, when you're drilling a hole, how deep you are unless you're down in that hole. And basically the tools that I was making up were their eyes to see inside the hole we were drilling.
With Forrest's steady income, the couple bought a brick house on a quiet cul-de-sac. They didn't know that after the oil spill, the Obama administration would place a moratorium on deep water drilling.
We were here a week or 2 weeks before I wound up finding out that I lost my job, my good job.
Forrest found temporary work with the same employer, sweeping floors, servicing machines, driving a truck, and making coffee. It pays $10 an hour.
With my little $400 a week job, I've done that. I've went out of town. I lived in Houma in our shop that we have over there, literally lived in a tool shed and came back on the weekends to spend with my family just to make $2 more an hour. And whenever that job ran out, I would basically work around the neighborhood. I've got friends and elderly people that I know. I've basically done air conditioner work for them, painting, just any scratching and picking at anything I can just to keep the wound from bleeding.
There's this point where I was at the dollar store, and my little two, he was two at the time. He had a fever, and I was holding him, and I only had a certain amount of money. And the other kids, it was time for their lunch, and we didn't have anything to give them. And I was just sitting in the dollar store making that decision. Do I buy Tylenol for the baby, for the fevery baby, or do I buy bologna to make sandwiches for the kids for lunch? And I just broke down because I thought, how in the heck did we get here in such a short amount of time? You are told as a kid, if you work hard and if you go to school and you do what you're supposed to and you follow the laws and that you are going to get ahead, that this is America and you can, crawl yourself to the top. And we did claw ourselves to the top, and we put his life in danger to do it. And we did without to do it to take care of our kids. And here we are that some other entity, whether it be the government or someone, can come in and take that out from under you. You don't know what it's like to have six kids and tell your oldest he can't go back for seconds because there's nothing left. And me and Dad didn't eat.
But Forrest's job predicament is only half the couple's experience. Here's the other half. Cherie writes part-time for a local newspaper. Last May, before the moratorium, she attended a press tour of the Mississippi Delta just as oil from the spill was hitting the marshes. She returned to the Delta the following week and went out on a boat with a fisherman and his young son.
I just remember that little dude, he just wanted to be a fisherman. That's all he did. He went out with his dad from the time he was old enough to walk. And we drove around like most of the day, and then we came up on this bird that was in the water, and it was really, it was dying already anyway when we picked it up. But we decided we were going to try to get it back to Fort Jackson to get some help. And when we pulled it up onto the boat, it was having convulsions, and it passed away while we were trying to get it back. And we were just all, it was silence, The marsh was silent anyway, because by then all the insects were dying off, and the birds were not there, and so it was just deafening silence with just me and him and that little boy and the bird. And me and the little boy were just sitting next to the bird, and we watched it just pass. I felt guilty, not because my husband works in the oil field, because we do what we have to do to survive, but mostly because I thought of all the things that we as people here in America, we take for granted and we waste. I had to look in the mirror at myself and just say, what have I not seen here that I could have done as a person to make things better?
Cherie became an activist, but not one who could be easily pegged. She has spoken out for turtles and pelicans and for the health of cleanup workers who came in contact with oil and dispersants. She has also spoken out against the moratorium, which ended in October, although the government did not issue another deepwater permit until late February. Her environmentalism, combined with her push for renewed drilling, makes her an uncomfortable ally for both sides.
I spoke at the Louisiana Oil and Gas Association. They had a big rally here. 12,000 people in the stadium, biggest group I ever spoke to. Oil workers all came in. They bussed them in so they could come to this rally. And it was like, they were all talking about money and how we had to get people up and, you know, fight this moratorium and everything. And they called me and they said, well, look, this is great. It's an excellent speech, but we're going to take out anything it has to do with the environment. I was like, no, I'm not going to do it if you don't let me do it my way and let me do my thing, right? So they let me do it. Well, you don't know how many people came up to me, oil workers, afterwards and said, yours was the best one, because it wasn't political. It was about all of us joining together to take care of what we love, right? So it wasn't the oil workers that was divided. It was the people that were putting on the show. So a few months later, I got asked to speak in Washington by an environmental group. They wanted me to cut out everything had to do with the oil worker and the oil industry. I said, no, I'm not going to cut it out, because that's what's affecting my family. That's who I'm speaking for. And I had people come, environmental activists come up and say, thank you so much for explaining that to me. I can see now, you know, how the oil workers love the environment and how the fishermen are the same as the oil workers, that they love the environment too, that they're the same people. And it helped me. The environmentalists weren't divided either.
Cherie's newfound activism has been hard. For one, it has brought her into contact with polluted wetlands. A blood test this winter showed high levels of ethyl benzene and xylene in her system. According to chemist Wilma Subra, these toxic solvents correspond to the chemicals in BP crude oil. Cherie also hates being away from her children, and her walk to D.C. will be a long separation, but she says they're the reason she keeps at it.
What kind of world am I going to leave for my kids if I don't show them that when somebody comes in and messes with you and takes away your livelihood, you don't just lay down, you get up and you keep going and fighting until you have nothing left, and it's all for them.
In Rain, Louisiana, I'm Barry Yeoman.